Abortion pills have been legal since 2000 and now make up for more than half of all abortions because they're being sold as the more comfortable solution. But abortion pills actually come with many complications and side effects, like severe pain, heavy and prolonged bleeding, fever, infection, and cramping. But these are just the complications that pro-abortion organizations mention. What they don't mention is that abortion pills can lead to blood clotting, described by one patient as the size of a lemon, incomplete abortions, which require a follow-up surgical abortion, pain, sometimes described as worse than childbirth, mental distress and a fear of dying, and in some cases, the abortion pill has led to death of the mother. This isn't hyperbole. So far, 24 women have lost their lives from complications with abortion pills. And get this, nearly half of all women who take the abortion pill seek medical attention after. That doesn't sound very comfortable or safe, does it? In spite of these complications, abortion vendors have fought to remove safety regulations and to disregard the research that says women have been hurt by abortion pills. But the truth is this, these little pills kill.
When I worked at Planned Parenthood as an RHA, we were told to mislead the women that came in looking for abortion pills. We were instructed to tell them the abortion pills were going to be easy, and we knew they weren't. Still, I was told to go to the grocery store and buy a lemon to show the women how big the clots would get. These women were experiencing intense pain, and they were afraid for their lives.
Welcome to Positively Pro-Life Podcast. Positively Pro-Life is brought to you by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation and aims to bring you inspirational stories and conversation, important legislative updates and informative interviews as we seek to restore and strengthen a culture of life. I'm your host, Remel Tenney, Education Director at the Federation, and a warm welcome to my co-host, Executive Director Maria Gallagher.
It's so great to be with you today, Remel.
As always, it's such a delight to co-host with you. Now, very interesting happenings in the political world lately in this important election year. And on the pro-life front, several states are expecting ballot initiatives this November on whether to make abortion a state constitutional right. A neighboring state that has an upcoming vote on this issue is Maryland. And today we will be speaking with Laura Bogley of Maryland Right to Life. I'm going to start us off with an inspiration for the week, following which Maria will give us a pro-life update, and then we will hear from Laura. Now, Students for Life recently launched a campaign with stories of people who were almost aborted. In each of the almost aborted stories, you will hear real experiences of real people who almost didn't live. One of these stories is about Mia, a young girl with Down syndrome. Now, her mother, Kara, and Mia talk about the pressure they faced from medical professionals to abort during Kara's pregnancy because of Mia's higher than normal chance of being born differently abled. Kara says the doctor painted a very bleak picture of life with Down syndrome. Now, a few decades ago, we did not have the support or healthcare system to help a Down syndrome baby thrive. But we don't live in that era anymore, and yet this type of pressure is still very rampant. Thankfully, Kara and her husband resisted coercion and went on to have Mia, who is now a vibrant 13-year-old actress, model, and voiceover artist. Now, in this video, there is a picture that they have shared of the day Mia was born, and I wish I could describe to you the joy on Kara's and her husband's faces. Kara is still lying on the hospital bed after delivery, and the dad is holding this newborn baby up to her, and their faces are 100% lit up. And I saw that, my first thoughts were, now that is the joy that you will never see after an abortion. As daunting as life with a Down syndrome baby or a baby with a life-limiting diagnosis may seem, the birth of a new life almost always brings joy into the lives of parents who decide to let their child live. Another story featured on there is Lily's, who whose second baby, Felicity, was diagnosed with several genetic abnormalities and passed away at 28 weeks in utero. They also faced much pressure from doctors to abort, but they endured. And Lily says, after birth, I studied and admired every inch of her little body. Now, because she didn't choose abortion, she knew what her daughter looked like, and she knew that her daughter had a full head of hair, and she was able to admire each of her little toes and fingers and her little cute little nose. Lily says, it's hard to describe the peace I had while my heart was breaking and my body was still enduring all of the physical pain of labor. It's a peace knowing that I honored Felicity's life and never gave in. Although we grieved deeply, we grieved with joy, knowing that our daughter only experienced love in this life. For those who choose abortion in circumstances like these, it is often because of coercion, misinformation, and the lack of support. And they do experience a lot of grief from losing their child. But when doctors and close friends and family offer them abortion as their only option, they are depriving them of experiencing their child's life fully, no matter how limiting it is or how short it is. If you read accounts of post-abortive women, a common theme is deep and enduring sadness. And some women do say they are at peace with their decision, but none of them can claim that abortion gave them joy. Now, that's something to think about. I hope these stories of Kara and Lily can inspire you to share the connected message of life and joy and impart strength to parents who may be faced with similar medical challenges. Because joy can always be found, even in suffering, only when life has been honored. And with that, here's Maria with her update.
Excellent, Rimmel. The power of one. That was the main message I sought to deliver at a workshop on grassroots lobbying at the June National Right to Life Conference just outside Washington, D.C. The incredible director of state legislation for National Right to Life, Ingrid Duran, set the stage with her fascinating presentation on effective lobbying techniques across the states. Gifted and winsome, Ingrid possesses an enthusiasm for pro-life legislation that is absolutely infectious. I followed her lead by talking about the difference one vote can make in determining whether pro-life legislation will progress or stagnate. In the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, Democrats hold the majority by a single vote. As a result of that one vote advantage, meaningful pro-life legislation is impossible to pass. Instead, advocates for life in PA are playing defense, fighting against the flurry of pro-abortion bills that have been introduced in an effort to dismantle our time-tested Abortion Control Act. Still, even with the disappointments in the PA House, possibilities for pro-life progress continue. For instance, the citizens of Northampton County, PA, recently stopped a resolution which would have declared the county a sanctuary for abortion. The measure would have meant that even if PA passed a law protecting preborn children and their mothers from the harm of abortion, abortions could have continued unabated in Northampton County. In the most recent statistics released by the PA Department of Health, Northampton County recorded 2,403 abortions, the equivalent of the combined student populations at several schools. Yet it is comforting to know that there are so many valiant citizens in the county ready to stand up for life. Whenever you get discouraged about the state of pro-life legislation in your state, I invite you to recall the power of one and to keep on advocating for the most vulnerable among us. You never know when your advocacy will help change a heart and save a life. Rimmel.
Wow, that was an incredible message. Thank you for that, Maria. Our guest today is Laura Bogley, the Executive Director of Maryland Right to Life. She served as Director of Legislation at the organization before taking on this role, and she is a seasoned policy consultant with over 30 years of experience in the corporate and public sectors. Laura has held government affairs positions at each level of government, serving elected members of national, state, and county legislatures. Laura earned her Juris Doctorate from the University of Baltimore School of Law, following undergraduate studies in political science at the Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C. She has extensive training in legislative advocacy through the Advocacy Institute, Maryland Association of Nonprofit Organizations, and congressional internships. Welcome, Laura, to Positively Pro-Life.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Rimmel.
We're so glad to have you as well. Now, tell us about the present fight for life in Maryland. What is happening in Maryland?
Well, like our neighbor in Pennsylvania, we're really fighting a defensive ground game. But in Maryland, we're outnumbered. Pro-life legislators are outnumbered 3-1 in the Maryland legislature. So we are very successful in defeating bad legislation, legislative threats to life. But we're always challenged to try to enact life-saving legislation. Right now, we're acutely focused on defeating our ballot question, which is a reproductive freedom or so-called reproductive freedom attack on our Maryland Constitution. And so we're focused on that. That's going to be on the ballot in November. Maryland was actually the first state that was confirmed to have an abortion amendment on the ballot. And now I think we may be up to 12 or 14 states that are facing similar battles.
So tell us about Maryland Right to Life's efforts to defeat that upcoming ballot initiative in November.
Well, thank you, Maria. Of course, we worked fiercely to try to defeat the authorizing legislation. In Maryland, our ballot question is a legislatively referred ballot question, meaning that the legislature passed, the majority party in the legislature passed a bill to put the ballot question on the November 2024 ballot. So we fought that fiercely, and we're very appreciative to our supporters that came out to help us fight that. Maryland, we were actually successful with the help of our supporters in defeating three previous attempts to put a right to abortion, unlimited right to abortion on demand in our state constitution. But finally, in 2023, under the new rabidly pro-abort governor, Wes Moore of Maryland, who made this a political priority, they pushed this legislation through. So Maryland has had the benefit as an affiliate of National Right to Life to access the resources and the wisdom from our peers across the country who have faced similar ballot measures. And so we've really worked with National Right to Life and our state affiliates to create a campaign structure. We have formed a coalition, a ballot issue campaign called Maryland Health Not Harm MD. And again, that's a registered ballot issue committee in the state of Maryland. And we have a coalition of partners, both state and national partners, that are working with us to try to bring the truth, the whole truth about the risks of this amendment to Maryland voters.
We know that Ohio had boots on the ground campaign where people went door to door. Is there an attempt to do that in Maryland?
Absolutely, Rimmel. We are doing that. We have been actually organizing this campaign for June. June was a year. So we've been working on this campaign for about a year. We have 23 counties in the state of Maryland and one and Baltimore City. And so we have a ground game where we have points of contact and precinct volunteers for every county in Baltimore City who have been for months now organizing volunteers to be there at the precincts, at the polls, informing voters. We're also going to be doing some door-to-door canvassing, as they did in Ohio and other states, some phone banking, and also using kind of more advanced digital media, digital advertising, to try to get the truth about the risks of this amendment to Maryland voters.
And can you tell us more about those risks?
Absolutely, Maria. You know, one of the things that you probably are hearing from the other states that have faced this or similar ballot questions is that it will create a constitutional right or fundamental right to abortion on demand for any reason through birth. And in Maryland, that means that the government would not be able to burden that in any way, including no health and safety regulations, as we have for any other area of medical practice, which is severely reducing the standard of medical care in Maryland,
putting women and girls at greater risk of harm and injury. And with the proliferation of chemical abortion drugs and human trafficking into Maryland for late-term abortions, we know that we're going to see a dramatic escalation in injuries and deaths of women and girls in our state, whether they're residents or they're trafficked here from other states. But what you may not hear from some of the other states is that the Reproductive Freedom Amendment is not limited to abortion. And in fact, proponents have acknowledged that a woman's right to abortion is not at risk in Maryland. In 1991, the state legislature passed a Freedom of Choice Act to create even broader abortion rights than women had under Roe v. Wade. So it's not necessary for the legislature or for the voters to enact a state constitutional amendment to protect women's abortion rights. They are protected through birth for any reason, and taxpayer funding is available. So during our legislative hearing, we got really to the heart of what is the definition of reproductive freedom. And the proponents, the sponsors of the bills, acknowledged that this amendment would create new and broader rights than abortion, including the rights of adults to perform gender transition procedures and surgeries on minors and without parental consent. So this is part of the challenge for us. We're not going to tell half of the truth about the risk of this amendment. We want voters to be fully informed and know all of the risks at stake. So these proponents are not just coming for our pre-born children, but they're coming for your born children and really want to remove parental rights to make those important and life-altering medical decisions for their minor children.
Now, I assume that the mainstream media is not covering half of it, but are you able to get a pulse of the general public? Where are they when you start talking to them about what this is really about?
Well, Rennell, one of the things that we were able to do through the coalition is we did kind of a practice campaign during the primary election cycle. And we went out to the local polls and we talked to voters. And we heard a lot of concerns from the voters. When they realized it was not just about abortion, they were very, very concerned about the health and safety of their own children. So the pulse that we're getting from voters is that they absolutely, whether they're pro-life, pro-choice, you know, pro-trans or not, they still want parents to have that right to make those important medical decisions for their children. And that's the distinction. And really, these parents are entrusting the state to protect their children, to do the right things for their children, to be safeguarding health for their children. And the state has failed in that responsibility. And so parents are really alarmed when they learn the truth. And they people that were otherwise maybe disinterested or neutralized on the issue of abortion are really now motivated, mobilized to come out and vote and help us get out the vote to let parents protect their children.
And if we have listeners in Maryland who are concerned about the erosion of parental rights that would come with this ballot question, what can they do as ordinary citizens?
Well, Maria, education and outreach is so key. And so what we're asking people to do is to support the efforts of the healthnotharmmd.org coalition. So that's healthnotharmmd, like the state, .org coalition. All of the information, flyers there that you can distribute to family, neighbors, friends, bulletin inserts that you can use with your pastor's blessing at your churches, they've all been provided both in English and in Spanish. So it's very important, just if voters could at least inform their own circle, community-based organizations, their churches, their families, their friends, I think we have a legitimate opportunity to defeat this dangerous amendment.
I'm going to switch gears here a little bit, and I wanted to also talk about the victories that you've had in this session. So can you tell us a little bit about some of the bills that were introduced and what you were able to win?
Well, thank you, Rema. You know, we, again, as Maria said, we really have a defensive ground game. And we're very successful at defeating bad legislation, despite the fact that we're outnumbered 3-1. So we had some really great pro-life bills that were introduced. Unfortunately, in Maryland, there is systematic discrimination against the content of pro-life speech. And any pro-life bill is denied a vote, both in legislative committee and the assembly floor. So in Maryland, they don't defeat our pro-life bills. They simply suppress them, which, of course, is a violation of the constitutional freedoms of pro-life citizens in the state of Maryland. So we're always advocating and working with the legislators to try to bring forth this legislation. This year, we did have one major win in that regard, and that was the enactment of a Maryland safe haven expansion law. And so Maryland has had a safe haven program on the books since about 2012. But the state and the Department of Health have largely ignored or failed to implement this life-saving program. And for any of your listeners who aren't aware with the safe haven programs, who Justice Amy Coney Barrett, I think, really brought public attention to, they're laws that allow a woman who cannot care for her newborn child to safely surrender that child to a trusted authority figure without fear of criminal investigation or prosecution. This is an important life-saving tool because we have, and other states have, these abandonments, these illegal abandonments, where children, unfortunately, are left to die. And we had that situation in Maryland in recent years where the pro-life movement rallied to provide a burial. We also had an incident last month in Baltimore City, where the remains of two fetal human beings were found on a Baltimore City transit bus, which we thought was likely the result of an abortion. And unfortunately, this woman was left to her own devices and did not get sufficient adequate care. So we're still waiting for the results of that investigation. But our goal is to give women more choices, empower them to choose life for their children. So our new Maryland Safe Haven law is now one of the strongest in the nation. We increased the amount of time after birth that women could safely surrender their children from 10 days to a full 60 days after birth. So that's up to 2 months. We also now became the 19th state in the nation that has authorized the use of Safe Haven baby boxes, which I'm sure you're familiar with. These devices are saving lives across the country. And what we find about the Safe Haven baby boxes is that they enhance the woman's privacy. So many of these women are under duress. So this gives them the opportunity to have full anonymity to safely surrender their babies. And so it is saving lives. So we're excited about that. Our county chapters are competing to be, you know, the first, second, third to get these baby box devices installed and implemented in their counties. So we think this is going to be a great tool to really protect lives and empower women to choose life.
And what advice would you have for young people considering joining the pro-life movement?
Maria, I would first say to any young people now getting into the pro-life movement, be brave. You were born for such a time as this. You know, we're all privileged to be born. We're privileged every morning we wake up and we breathe another breath. And that means that God still has purpose for you in your life. So I would just encourage you to surround yourself with a good, strong support system. And really, that can start with family, but also I think it's important to find educational institutions that will train you, faith-based educational institutions that will really support you in your faith, support you in your principles, and give you that strong foundation that you need then to go out and face the world. A lot of us try to just get right into the mainstream, and we try to compete there, and we try to exist there, or coexist there. But I would really encourage you, before you go out in the world and you face that mainstream onslaught, which is really a pro-death culture, shore yourself up, shore your faith up by getting your education from a good faith-based college or university where they're really going to invest in your success.
Well, you've had a very impressive career and educational background. So can you tell us how you came to hold your pro-life beliefs and what led you to work for the pro-life movement?
Well, again, I was privileged. I was born into a Catholic pro-life family. My father was the last pro-life Democrat lieutenant governor of the state of Maryland. And that was back in the late 70s, early 80s. And of course, this was a big issue at that point in time because of the enactment of Roe v. Wade in 1973. And so through his experience, I really saw that fissure that abortion caused within the Democrat Party. But with my mother's influence and my grandmother's influence, I was blessed to be attending the National Right to Life March from the time I was in a stroller. They did tell me the truth about abortion. They showed me the graphic photos. So I learned the truth very early on. And I would just encourage parents to do that. Don't be afraid of sharing the truth with your children. Of course, we want to do things that are age appropriate. But this world is coming to deceive and lie your children. Planned Parenthood has their curriculum as early as kindergarten in our public education system. So you want to make sure your children hear the truth about life from you.
We have just about a minute and a half left. And I'm wondering, in that minute and a half, your final thoughts on the state of life in Maryland.
Well, first of all, we're very grateful for the partnership of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. We've been working with Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation to try to counter some of this human trafficking, interstate abortion trafficking that is particularly is coming to Maryland because the government here made Maryland and a late-term abortion tourism destination. So what I think we are collectively tasked to do is to change the culture of life. The government's not going to come to rescue women. We have to be there through our families, through our churches, through our community-based organizations. And we have the power working together to collectively change that culture of life. And I do believe that the future of Maryland and Pennsylvania is firmly pro-life.
Very well said. Laura Bogley, Executive Director of Maryland Right to Life, thank you so much for appearing on Positively Pro-Life.
Thank you, Maria. Thank you, Ramel.
Positively Pro-Life is made possible through the generous support of the members of the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation all across the Commonwealth. The Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation is the largest single-issue pro-life organization in the Keystone State, with nearly 40 local county-based chapters. We shine a spotlight on the most vulnerable individuals. Thank you for joining us on the program today. It wouldn't be the same without you. We are grateful for your support. And remember, there's always a reason to choose life.